What is up, everybody, and welcome back to Tailgate Talks. We are back after another extended break there. Once again, it is summer, and we're just going to kind of repeat this line over. It's summer. The headlines are slow here right now, and we've also got things going on in our own lives, and so we've been a little slow getting back on the mics, but we're hoping to pick that up here over the next few weeks, get some more episodes out to you guys fast. But today is June 11th, and we are recording episode 224. Today we're going to be discussing the latest Texas Tech basketball commit, JT Toppin. It's been a little over a week now since he has committed, so we'll get into that commitment, our thoughts on that, what we can expect for basketball now that the big recruit is on the board. And then we'll get into a little baseball discussion. Baron Morton made a throw and some other little things. So got some fun things to talk about this week. We're happy to be back on the mics. We hope you're happy to have us back to listen to and to catch everything we're doing here at Tailgate Talks. I urge you to follow us. Follow us on Apple. Follow us on Spotify. Give us those five stars. Five stars for the tailgate. And if you listen to us on Apple, you can always leave us a review there. We appreciate those. Also, follow us on social media. We do most of our posting and everything pretty much just on Twitter. So follow us on Twitter at @tailgate_talks. However, we do have Facebook, Instagram, and a YouTube channel. So give those a follow. And if you have any questions, comments, anything you'd like us to discuss, anything you'd like to discuss with us, you can always shoot us an email. Email us at tailgatetalkspod@gmail.com. So with all of that said, let's get into this week's episode.
Get your guns up, Red Raider Nation. Let's go.
Well, Dustin, since the last time we spoke, basketball had it had been kind of slow. Some rumors were starting to percolate about JT Toppin becoming a Texas Tech Red Raider. There was Jalen Wells, who was also a recruit, but now everything is known. We kind of know what the majority of this Texas Tech basketball roster is going to be, and really that came to the conclusion with JT Toppin, the University of New Mexico transfer, committing to Texas Tech. So before I get into some of his information, this was a roller coaster of a recruitment for JT Toppin. He was a guy we were well connected with, a Dallas area kid, got the connection with Buff. One of his best friends is a guy that we signed as a preferred walk-on. Then all of a sudden, Texas becomes the favorite. Then it swings back into our favor. And then we finally land him. So your thoughts on once the word came out that JT Toppin was officially a Red Raider?
Yeah, it's a huge, huge get. Hopefully he's only here for 1 year, to be honest. If he does what we expect him to do, he should be a one and done for us and go to the draft and be a lottery type pick. But this was the biggest piece we needed. And we got a very talented guy, you know, had to fight Austin and UT for him very hard. Apparently he actually committed to them days before, the week before, and then took some more convincing of him and his mom and agent and money, I'm sure.
Money helped.
To get him off that UT and that orange and back up here, because the better basketball fit for him is here.
Yeah.
And what we have put together this year already. And now, I mean, it's such a good, good piece. I'll kind of let you talk about his numbers, and then we can get into where we kind of see him filling up the stat sheets for us.
Yeah, for me, this was just, you know, it was exciting. It was like a sigh of relief.
Huge.
It was a big sigh of relief because it was like, finally, because this was like the number one guy that I wanted in the portal. I know we flirted with Great Osabor. I know we flirted with Trezarian White, and those things didn't come to fruition. We also got guys on the roster that I did like, but JT Toppin was my number one.
I agree with you.
Just because, you know, if anything comes to pass, you know, we know what it's like to have the Mountain West Conference Freshman of the Year play for you. And
you called this.
Yeah, I called this. I said this before we even knew anything I was just like, go ahead and get the freshman of the year from the Mountain West Conference. Yep. That's what we did. Back-to-back years. Worked out pretty well last year. But this is an exciting kid, JT Toppin, coming in at 6'9", 210 pounds. So that might not sound like the 7-foot center that some of you people might be necessarily wanting for Texas Tech, but this is a kid who comes in who averaged 12.4 points per game, 9.1 rebounds per game last year, almost averaged a double-double as a freshman in the Mountain West Conference, which is not a Power Six conference, but it is like that tier right below.
No doubt.
You know, they might have not had great success in the NCAA tournament, but this is a pretty good conference.
They had a really good conference last year.
They get a lot of teams in the tournament every year. Utah State, Colorado State, like a bunch of other good teams. San Diego State, who's always good. Nevada, who we're familiar with stealing Darian Williams from. So a really good conference. He was like I said, the freshman of the year in the conference, a second team all conference as well as a freshman, the second team all conference, pretty dang good. He led the Mountain West Conference in field goal percentage. He led the Mountain West Conference in rebounds at 9.1 rebounds a game. He led the conference in offensive rebounds at 3.6 rebounds per game. He also led the Mountain West Conference in blocks at 1.9 blocks per game. So just a stat stuffer. One of the top defenders in the country who came in with a 93.8 rating after his freshman year. One of the best rebounders in the country. He had 132 rebounds, which was sixth nationally.
Wow.
That's pretty good. He was seventh nationally in overall points per possession. So you're also getting a really good offensive weapon with JT Toppin. And then so that's kind of some of the stats there. Dustin, once we got through all those stats, what are some of the things that really pop out to you about Mr. Toppin?
The rebounding first thing jumped off the board. When I watched film on him this last week, you might watch, and like the first thing I see is just the dude is active. Like there's energy, there's activity. He's never just standing there waiting on the ball to come to him. He almost had a little bit of that like Dennis Rodman to him.
Yeah.
Like the ball goes up and he's just floating around, like knows where it's going to be and boom, grab right bucket, put back. And like, that's the biggest thing I noticed was he finds the ball so well and rebounds so well. Now his straight up offensive game's not going to blow you away from last year's film. He could get his own shot sometimes. That wasn't really his specialty, but I'm sure that was one of the NBA things that was like, work on your shooting and your post game to get that up. So I would expect a big jump there from the freshman to sophomore season. I'm going to kind of go more on that with how he fits with this team, because I think that plays really well with his skill set. But yeah, dude, the guys that we got this year, we're not getting out rebounded this season.
Yeah, you could tell there was an emphasis on
no
that.
No chance.
You got Feedy times two, who's coming in, who's going to be, you know, with his size, is going to be a great rebounder for you. We already know Darian Williams can be a pretty good rebounder at his size. And then you bring in a guy who averaged 9.1 rebounds, was the sixth overall leader in rebounding last year at 6'9". That just shows a lot as a freshman. He's going to improve on that. And that what's one of the biggest gripes we had about last year's team? It was the rebounding.
Props to this coaching staff and Buff, because we didn't really get bigger like you kind of expect, but we found dudes that can do the job at the size they are, you know?
Yeah.
Like Toppin's a great power forward body. He's not the 7-footer, you know. Fed is about 7 foot, and that's it. That's about the tallest we got. But the skill set on their rebounding and their defense at the size they are is incredible. And so they found dudes that can fit, because there ain't a lot of 7-footers out there to go get.
No, the big market is always the big, and like the point guard market are all those that are very slim. You can find plenty of wings out there in the portal market. We can't really find big guys and elite ball handlers, and you picked up one of the best elite ball handlers in the country.
No doubt.
You picked up one of the best defenders in the country in Feedy, and then you picked up one of the best overall like freshmen coming in who's already put up some impressive numbers when you compare it to the rest of the country. And so You know, this is a guy who's only going to get better. He's got a huge upside. Like you said, your expectation is that he's here for 1 year, because if everything goes according to plan, you have a really good season, a competitive season, one where you make the tournament, and, you know, whoever knows how that's going to end, but it's going to end with Toppin hopefully doing everything he needed to do from the NBA perspective, build on his offensive game, become more of a shot creator, be able to find his own shot, and get to that next level. So a really exciting prospect here. We've talked a lot about the rebounding. The defense is another thing that's exciting to him. What do you think we can expect from him on the offensive side of the ball? Because one of the things that I did like about his game was how good he was in the pick and roll, and how beautiful that sounds with guys like Elijah Hawkins, Darian Williams, Kevin Overton, Chance McMillan's, the possibilities you can do with him as a PNR guy in this offense.
Man, as soon as we got him, I was just like, literally just laying in bed that night thinking about pick and rolls with Elijah Hawkins and JT Toppin at the top of the key. And you got Chance or Kerwin on one side and Darian in the other corner. And it's going to be a bitch to guard with such a skillful point guard, a very good and active big man at the top, and really good shooters on the outside. Like, the threats we have at so many levels and is incredible. But yeah, that's what I picture us doing, is running big time pick and rolls with Toppin and getting him moving towards the basket for alley-oops or rebounds. And if guys don't want to crash on Hawkins, he'll just put up floaters for 20 a game, but eventually they're going to have to. And bam, there's Kerwin and Chance on this side. Swing the ball around. There's Darian on the other side. Cambridge can't lose track of him when he's down low. Like, the options are just incredible. And I mentioned earlier, like, his offensive skill set's not going to wow you if you look at last year. And that's all right with what I just said. Like, we have the shooters and the playmakers. We need him to just set good screens, make some, you know, 15 or so footers every now and then, crash boards and get rebounds. And like, he's going to get enough points to fill up the stat sheet. And you won't even notice. Like, he doesn't need to sit down in the post and shoot the ball with who we got.
It's kind of like whatever he adds to his game is just going to be like an, you know, it's obviously bonus, an added bonus to this team, because if he can become a guy who can kind of get his own shot, kind of do like the what Darian Williams started doing in the middle of the season, where he's like, oh, we can get this guy the ball, and he can kind of take guys off the dribble. He can hit shots, be a consistent knockdown shooter. He can be bigger than the guys guarding him on the interior. That's very interesting to me. I think, like, I think a lot of Elijah Hawkins and what that's going to be with the pick and roll there. But I also think, like, getting Darian Williams the ball and running a little pick and roll action with both of them, like, that's going to fuck up a defense too. If, like, which one do I want to guard?
Yeah.
Like you're going to be able to do a lot. And like you said, you've got a lot of shooters. You've got Kerwin, Chance, Darian. You've got a bunch of guys on this team. Kevin Overton, who's going to be another guy who's going to be able to knock down some shots for you. You got a lot of guys that, you know, it's going to be a headache for defenses to try to figure out which guy they're going to try to defend here or take out of the game. And then you got other options. And so, if I'm a shooter, if I'm Chance, if I'm Kerwin, I love this setup right now, because this is going to create so many open threes with the spacing that you're going to be able to create.
And our least favorite thing that we always give up is offensive rebounding, boom, kick out three.
Yeah.
Now we got really good offensive rebounders to kick out to these shooters.
Yeah, the extra possessions that you're going to be able to create with Fee down there, with JT Toppin, if they're able, you know, if he's able to enhance his rebounding from year one, like, that's, he averaged 3.6 offensive rebounds per game. That's three, almost four extra possessions.
And it was at like 2.5 or three, I think, from what I remember. Like,
Six extra possessions where one, Toppin is great around getting an offensive rebound and then finishing the offensive rebound, you know, and closing out around the rim. So that's just extra points that you're adding there if he's able to to do that. If Feedy, I don't imagine Feedy will be like an offensive force, but get a rebound, like you said, get a kick out, hit a open chance, hit a open Kerwin, hit a open Darian or somebody out there. Even Elijah Hawkins, good 3-point shooter. So you got a lot of weapons. You got a lot of guys offensively. What do you think ultimately like this commitment does for this team now? Like as we've kind of been, you know, projected outside the top 25, once we got JT Toppin, that's the first time I've really seen some, you know, we're not big preseason rankings guys, but it's the first time I've seen some actually have us as a top 25 team. What do you think this does for our ceiling?
The biggest relief about this news is like this solidifies your like playable roster, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You're now a good 10 deep at who could play with who you got there. And so in your bigs, you'll probably rotate those big guys with Cambridge, Toppin, and Fede.
Don't forget EY. EY will get minutes too.
EY will get minutes too, but like not as much as he needed to get last year, as long as everybody's healthy. And then, yeah, you're good at the guard spot, the wing spot, and then Anderson backing up Elijah Hawkins is great. So you're way deeper, and the level of your guys is higher than last year too.
Yeah.
So that's great, and that's why you're a top 20 type team. I think going into year two and a lot of these pieces moving, you're not going to be a lot higher than that, which is fine, especially with – how freaking loaded so many teams are this next year. College basketball is going to be incredibly good next year, all around. Like
Big 12 is going to be incredibly good.
And that's where I was going next. I've told this to you and a few other people. Like, basically, here's the truth of it, and I really believe this. In the Big 12 standings, we probably will be worse than last year, which was tied for third/fourth.
And it's not a bad thing.
But we have a team that could contend still for a Final Four as the sixth best team in the Big 12.
I saw post, on, I think it was John Rossi, and it was like, there's five potential Big 12 teams that could be in the top 10. Kansas, Baylor, Houston, Iowa State, Arizona.
Yes.
And that's five teams that could be in the top 10. And I see Tech fans on Twitter being like, oh my gosh, you think we're going to finish sixth in the conference? I'm like, that's not a freaking bad thing.
I do.
All those teams are really freaking good. And it's like, oh, we finished third last year. It's like, yeah, we finished third last year, but the conference is adding in Arizona. You know, Kansas is going to be better than
Kansas
they were
last year.
Kansas came
back way more stacked. Baylor came back way more stacked. Houston rolled
Houston's
it back.
Running
with
it back
ro-
with the team that was
one
great.
Roster. Yeah. Arizona has a number one roster. Like
Iowa State's running it back with pretty much their same roster.
Iowa State's running back with some additions. And even like teams like West Virginia with a new
Kansas State
loaded back up. Like
Kansas State's pretty loaded. Cincy's loaded.
Cincinnati, I've seen. Yes. So like the Big 12 got way, way, way better with the top half of the conference.
Yeah.
Like I said, you could finish sixth or even seventh in the conference.
Yeah. Remember, it's going to have 16 teams. That's still top half. It's
like have a better team overall. Yes. And when you go into March, now it's like, oh, these games are a little easier than having to play Arizona and Kansas back to back 3 days later, you know? So like, that's to me, the God awful truth is like technically a standings worse team, but probably a better team overall. When you get to March, like you could still make a Elite Eight Final Four type run with this team, I think.
But now that we're like pretty much, you know, we got two roster spots, but now, you know, I already see the people bitching about where people have us ranked and stuff. I'm like, guys, like, it doesn't matter. You know, we're anti preseason polls and stuff like that. Like, I do get it. I do like to see the like 18 next to Texas Tech. Like, I do like seeing, hey, people are giving us that respect. I like that. But I mean, you got to look at the Big 12 this year. And if somebody has a sixth or seventh, that's not necessarily the worst thing in the world, because you got to look at all the teams that are right in front of you. I mean, TCU loaded up too. Like every team in the conference
is. You're not at 10 teams anymore.
Yeah. You're at 16 teams.
14, whatever you want to be.
16 teams coming in. You got, you know, usually kind of like last
20
year.
20 games.
Last year, it starts crazy. Some teams kind of fade out by the end of the year. That's what's going to happen. But there's going to be 10 10 to 12 teams in this conference that are going to be no guaranteed victories. I mean, we thought UCF was going to be a guaranteed victory last year. They came out and they were pretty competitive. You know, BYU was another team that we thought was going to be at the bottom of the conference. They came out, they were one of the best teams in the conference. So it's going to be an insane season next year. I can't wait for basketball. Just a quick question. The starting lineup.
Okay.
Do you think you have Feedy as the five, or do you think we're going to start small kind of and have Toppin at the five?
I think you start small.
Because I'm more on the, I think Feedy will be our starting five. And I don't necessarily think he'll be one of the highest player like minutes totals on our team.
Right.
I think we'll start Toppin at the four, Feedy at the five. Have that size to start games, especially when you're starting against like a Kansas who's got Hunter Dickinson. Sure. You're going to start Feedy. I do think you'll use a lot of minutes where it's JT at the five,
yeah,
maybe like a Darian at the four, and then, you know, go pretty guard heavy with Elijah Hawkins running.
Don't forget about Cambridge in there.
Yeah, that too. Like, there's so many versatile lineups that you can run with this team, because I mean, Cambridge, one of your most effective lineups before his injury was when Cambridge was the five for you. So
that's kind of how I see it. Ideally, when he gets healthy and when you're playing, is Cambridge and Toppiner, they're both a four, but you're playing both of them at the same time more than less.
I think of a lineup with like Chance, Kevin Overton, Darian Williams, Devin Cambridge, and JT Toppin, and you just got like size and everybody switchable.
Length everywhere.
That reminds me of like that Mark Adams first year team, because, you know, yeah, we didn't have huge guys on that. We just had a bunch of guys who could pretty much guard 1 through 5. And JT is going to be able to guard 1 through 5. Devin can. Darian can. Kevin Overton, yeah, might not be able to really guard 1 through 5. He's maybe 1 through 4. Same with Chance, but
that's the beauty of this roster too, is, you know, you got Hawkins is at the point guard and a lot of wings and even some interchangeable wings forward, yeah, type guys like you just mentioned. And so we are getting more back to that lengthy wing interchangeable, yeah, type players, which is great because you can move these guys around a lot easier than we could have last year and year before. And so, yeah, I think it's great. Yeah, you got Hawkins with Anderson behind him. Chance and Kerwin are going to do their thing just like they did last year. That role is not really going to be that different, I don't think, unless Chance just makes a huge jump. Unless,
yeah.
You can't take him off the floor type of dude. You know?
I wouldn't mind seeing him get a little more run with the ball, because I thought, you know, there was times he didn't really get to show it, but I thought he could create a shot.
Oh, yeah.
He was probably like the second best shot creator on the team. I mean,
definitely.
Pop could get his own shot. Doesn't necessarily mean it's a good
shot. Wasn't idea. A good shot.
but I thought Chance could, if he needed to get a shot, he could find a way to get a shot going.
He was your best guy at the end of the shot clock to, yeah, get a good or decent shot for that player.
There's a couple possessions in that NC State game where it was like he just had to create something, and he was able to do it and kind of hit a couple big buckets just to like keep you hanging around. So I'm really curious to see what his improvement is. And yeah, I think that's like the really cool part of this team. It's like you get all the exciting pieces. I do like Trilly Donovan says all the time, is like the best pieces you get are the ones you already have. And yeah, he always says that. It's like, man, I can't wait to see what Darian does from year two to year three.
Year three.
What Chance's next evolvement becomes. What Kerwin can do over the offseason. What Emili Lahu can become over an offseason. Like, there's some really excitement here with the guys that you had. And I'm glad that they committed to Grant and they believed in Grant and stayed. And so it's really exciting team that we put here. Any other kind of thoughts you have on the top in commitment or as the roster stands right now?
Now you got two spots left. You might leave one hanging, but probably we'll go get one more piece, but like that's probably like a red shirt or younger piece,
yeah,
for later, because you already have, like I said, a 10 deep with guys with pretty established roles and minutes, mm-hmm, almost you don't want to upset the apple cart now.
Yeah.
Apple cart. Like, you don't want to go get, you know, another big time player, and then now you messes up your locker room and your minutes and pisses somebody off. Like, I think you are great where you're at. So yeah, go scour, see what you can find, kind of like we did with EY at the end of last year. You know, go get a, not necessarily a project piece, but a guy that's willing to sit for a year and not do much next year.
Yeah, I'd be. That's what I've heard a lot of, is like where it's trying to maybe go get a foreign player, kind of like EY, to come in, another younger guy, maybe on the bigger side. If you can find a bigger one, 6'10" or above, who can come
please.
In and be a little bit of a project piece for you, but can come in and get you some solid minutes every now and then. That's kind of how I expect it. Maybe one more spot to get filled, keep that extra spot open. You've spent your money. You spent your money there on top end.
No doubt. You don't have any left.
I think you've maxed your budget out. So, I wouldn't expect any other big portal names to come here.
No.
I know there's been some people trying to drop that. There's been names, but I don't think there's any possibility with those. So, going to be younger guys, which are good to have. I think you've got enough experience on this team with the vets that getting another younger piece who can come in and maybe play 5-10 minutes for you here or there is going to be key. But I like the roster as it sits right now. Maybe once we get those final pieces sorted out, we'll come back on and kind of, you know, project our starters, kind of go through the entirety of the roster and do a little, you know, way too early look at it, but we do love the basketball. We're glad that this roster has come together, liking what Grant McCaslin is doing. And shout out to Grant, who just won the gold medal on that under 19 or under or 18 or whatever it is. I don't even know what, but he's an assistant coach for one of the USA under teams. And so congrats to him for that. Did want to mention before we go, Jalen Wells was a guy that we had kind of talked about, who was a guy who was reportedly wanting to come to Tech, but he did stay in the draft. So that was kind of the last puzzle piece that was out there that Tech has really been connected with. Right now, it's been pretty slow. There's not a lot of news going on the basketball front. So with that said, let's head over and let's discuss a little Texas Tech baseball now, as that season has officially come to an end since the last time we spoke to you guys. And so we've got some off-season news for that, and maybe just a little topic about where Texas Tech baseball is heading, and whether or not we are concerned about where Texas Tech baseball is heading. All right, Dustin, well, the Texas Tech baseball season came to an end since the last time we spoke. It ended in Arlington in the Big 12 tournament as they lost to Oklahoma State. They did win a few games there, made a little run, but that was their only hope to get to the NCAA tournament, was winning the whole thing. They did not do that. So the Red Raiders 2024 season comes to an end in a disappointing end that ended a pretty good streak of tournaments. You hadn't missed the NCAA tournament since the 2015 season. And so that's a pretty good run there of making the tournament, but ultimately a pretty disappointing season for the Red Raiders and Tadlock and this staff. Your thoughts as that season came to a conclusion?
On our end, we were glad it came to an end. Yeah. A lot of fans were over it. They did make it exciting there in Arlington for a little bit, but that loser's bracket by the end of that last day for us was a little rough, especially when you're starting a game at like 10 o'clock at night. Yeah. The schedule we talked about beforehand is a little wonky, but the timing of a lot of that is stupid from my side of it.
And then all those games, like half the games would go super long, and so you're playing into the next day. It's crazy.
Having teams play back to back when you have another side of the bracket is stupid.
Yeah.
Like the fact that Oklahoma State had to play again after us and it was like a 10 or 11 o'clock start was dumb. Like, you should alternate those games. But anyways, Big 12 will work on that. Probably not. Good run for Tadlock so far in these last like 10 years, basically. But the problem is now we're in a different time and space of college athletics and NIL. And I mean, it's kind of similar to football where the SEC is just dominating the baseball scene.
SEC and ACC. Only eight teams, four teams ACC, four teams SEC in the College World Series. That tells you anything.
Yeah, and they're the ones willing to dish out the money. I mean, we saw a couple of our guys go to Arkansas last year, and, you know, they're still playing, or they were still playing for a little while, but that's where we got to Tadlock and company have to sit down and decide where they want to go. Because from what I've kind of understood is he's being sticking with the old school route and wants to just do the recruiting and homegrown and limited transfer type stuff and not as much NIL. And that's not going to produce any Omaha type teams anymore is the fact of it. So now I don't know where our NIL baseball budget might sit, because I think that's pretty low as well, and that hurts. So that could be part of it as well. But yeah, if you're trying to homegrow things anymore, that's going to be a real, real tough road to go.
Yeah, it's tough for me. It feels like those Omaha days might be in the past.
Yeah.
Which, you know, at the time it was like, you know, I remember after the 19-1, I never made it out to Omaha. I was like, you know, the next time we make it, I'm going. And it felt like there's going to be a next time. And
20 was our best team, and then that didn't happen.
And that door feels like it's closed because, yeah, you go kind of through it. 2019, Omaha, great feeling. 2020 was maybe one of the best teams you had. COVID cuts that season short. 2021, you make the Supers. Stanford kicks your ass, and then it's been back-to-back regional seasons where you were a 3 seed, could kind of see the decline starting, and that was the beginning of the NIL transfer portal kind of era. And here you know, don't make the tournament at all. You end up as the 10th best team in the Big 12. A struggle of a season, and, you know, it's – I love Tadlock, but I mean, if you can't adapt to the way that things are in baseball now, you're gonna get lost.
Yep, and exactly.
Especially in a conference like this one, where, like you said, it's the SEC is top dog in baseball. The ACC is doing what they need to do to try to keep it close baseball wise. They have a lot of really good baseball programs. Yeah. They could have maybe had the edge over the SEC and teams that made it to the College World Series. So they're doing their part. But like you see us, we're kind of falling behind. No Big 12 teams make it there. You know, and you see Texas Tech, who was kind of like a powerhouse in the Big 12 conference for the last decade, it's kind of starting to get passed by some other programs. And so it's kind of alarming. I love Tadlock and I want this to be successful, and who knows, maybe he's able to figure this out and navigate it and continue to put out competitive teams that, you know, find themselves in Omaha at some point. But just what you've seen over the last few seasons hasn't really given you the confidence to believe that he can put that together. Haven't had the pitching. Your offense has disappeared. Last two regionals made, you couldn't score runs. And then transfer portal exits, you've lost, you know, your best pitcher last year, one of your best players in Hudson White. This year, Gavin Cash is leaving. Owen and Jack Washburn, Gage Harrelson, Davis Rivers, Landon Stripling's already committed to Florida, and there's probably other names as well that'll take place. So it's been a mass exodus from this roster, and a lot of pieces so far to me are like guys that I would have preferred to keep. It's kind of like some of the pitchers that I'm like, I wouldn't mind seeing you go and get some better pitchers in here, but that's not the case right now.
When I saw like the exodus start, I was like, oh man, it's going to be a domino and snowball type. But it wasn't as bad as I expected, I guess. I expected a mass exodus type deal, and really just a handful of dudes, and that's it. And it's like, okay, maybe we've weathered the storm. There might be one or two more, but that's about it. You know, if we can keep guys like TJ Pompey, who's a freshman All-American type dude, great. That's the guys we need to keep, is young freshmen that have high upside. But the pitching, is rough, obviously. And then when Free entered yesterday, I believe, earlier this week. So that one kind of hurts a little bit too.
Yeah, that one's a different. He cleared it up on Twitter. I don't know if you've seen this, but so he has no D1 eligibility left.
Oh,
but there's like some sort of exemption where you can go play like D2 or NAIA ball, and so he is entering the portal.
Sick.
For that. So
sick for some team that's like lower level is going to get him.
There's I guess a few guys who are using that, and so like some D2 team is just going to like clean up on this, and they're just going to have like these
sick.
This powerhouse. So that was the Ryan Free situation.
Gotcha,
so he can't go D1.
So then that one doesn't hurt anymore.
Yeah, that one would have really hurt, but yeah, knowing he doesn't have any D1 eligibility left, I'm like, okay, at least he can't go play for a team that you're competing against. But I'm just concerned that, you know, we're not going to get to that level that everybody's kind of established for us with the Tadlock era being here. But at the same time, I think about what were we before Tadlock? We were a baseball team who never had been to the College World Series.
Right.
So it's kind of like knowing who you are. It's like, at least this guy gives me the hope that there is a chance that we can make it back. It is tricky because he has a lifetime contract. So if these seasons of not making it to the tournament start adding up, I'd be curious to see what happens.
Yeah, I think we're far away from that. But
I do too, yeah.
I do still hope and anticipate a pitching coach change over this offseason.
Not seeing any news about that yet has me very concerned.
Yeah, I know.
And that's the other thing. I mean, this is broke. You got to fix it.
Yeah, it's been this way for years now.
You've got to make some sort of change here. It's just been trending in the wrong direction this year. It was the absolute worst to where you had literally like 10-run leads almost getting evaporated because you couldn't keep guys from scoring runs. Like, defense has got to be better. I do think like our hitting has got to be better. I think it's got to be more. I get Danlaw Field is a hitter's park, but you got to be able to take that on the road and be able to have offense in other places. And that's one thing you've struggled at over the recent years as well. So we'll be interesting to see what happens with baseball this offseason, what players you're able to get. If a pitching coach change is made, we'll be kind of monitoring that. Any other baseball thoughts you have as this season has ended?
Nope, not right now.
Not right now, and it is, like I said, a SEC-ACC dominated College World Series. Florida State, North Carolina, NC State, and Virginia, your four ACC teams, and then Florida, Tennessee, A&M, and who's the fourth SEC team that made it? Florida, Tennessee, A&M. Trying to do this off the top of my head.
Kentucky,
that's right. Are your College World Series participants. So I'm going to have to keep up with that. Those SEC teams, man, like watching all the – I did watch a lot of college baseball. Just kind of – was kind of nice to have a stress-free with it. Just kind of turn on games and watch. Those SEC stadiums, man, they're something else. And so I think you're falling behind in a lot of different things than just the NIL. So we'll see what happens there. Other little same kind of sport news, but the softball team lost their head coach over the weekend, with him leaving to be an assistant at Tennessee, which kind of caught all of the Texas Tech off guard once they found that news out. He's going to be the hitting coach there. But I guess he's marrying a lady who's also going to be an assistant there. So, but not really sure why that happened. Any thoughts on the sudden exit from Coach Snyder and the softball team?
Yeah, I saw a lot of people disappointed just because good season this last year and good recruiting class coming in and building on things. And then, just kind of taken out from under you. So, the, women's athletics side has had trouble keeping some coaches as of recently. And that's what's troubling, really.
Yeah, you really look at it and, we all know football is the leader of everything, and there's never going to be anything close to that. Well under that is college men's basketball, and then well under that is just about everything else.
Yes.
And we know that the ladies programs here at Texas Tech are just, for whatever reason, man, and I don't know who's to blame on that. I know a lot of fingers get pointed at Kirby. I really don't know, and I'm not going to go out and say who I think the issue is, because I don't know. I don't know what the issue is, but there's obviously something. There's obviously something if somebody's leaving to go be like the third assistant at a school from a head coaching job where he was having some momentum and had, like you said, one of the best recruiting classes you've ever had, and then leaves to go do that. So something doesn't smell right there.
Nope.
But we'll let journalists and other people tackle that one for us.
Yep.
Before we move on out of here, let's just do a little quick football segment. Dustin, Baron Morton threw a football over threw a football, and people were hyped about it. He threw two footballs, probably threw more, but two videos were recorded of him throwing deep balls that were accurate and were completed passes. Your thoughts on the videos that hit social media over the past few days?
Yes, let's really break these down. Who cares?
Who cares?
The people that got, I get He's being back. Somewhat excited, fine.
Yeah.
There was too much excitement. Are we glad he threw the ball 50 yards? Yes. Was there pressure? Was there defense? No. So glad he can throw it 50 yards. It looked pain-free, and that's all I can say about that. And that's great.
Yeah, that's great. I'm glad he can hit a wide open receiver.
There's my analysis.
With no defense on the field. I'm really good. I'm really glad about that. It is nice to see that he is hopefully healthy. There's a lot of speculation about what's going on with his arm.
Yeah.
And those were deep throws. And so it seems like there's some pop on the ball. And so that is a good sign to see. Am I going to say he's back? Am I going to say all that things? No, because he's not playing against the defense. It's just literally throwing it on a field with nobody else out there and just some of his boys. So I'm glad to see it. I am still so nervous about his arm and about him getting injured. And so, you know, good to see. Good. I think we'll file that in the things we do love to see.
Because we know our offensive coordinator is going to run the ball with him and get him banged up at some point.
I swear to God, if the first play of the season is like a RPO and Barrett
has to run the ball. Yep, it's going to be an RPO zone read, and he's going to keep it. And,
I might walk out of the stadium right then and there. If that happens, but glad to see that his arm looks better. Like that is promising.
It works.
There's just for the last there was a report that he, you know, they were shutting him down for spring. There's just been a lot of speculation. So I get that he kind of had to post that video, kind of show Texas Tech fans, hey, look, I can do it. Now we'll see if he's able to stay healthy. If we're able to keep a Texas Tech quarterback healthy for an entirety of a football season.
Woo.
But that's all the Texas Tech news besides, you know, last little bit here. President Skouvenek, it was reported yesterday that he had a medical emergency. That is not something you like to see pop up on your news, on your Twitter, on wherever you're kind of looking. It was a little alarming to see that, but all reports are that he's in good condition, he's stable, and that he's in good spirits. And so we love to hear that. So our thoughts and prayers go out to President Skouvenek. And all of Red Raider Nation is behind you and supporting you here and hoping for a quick and speedy recovery. And we'll get you back out there to doing what you do and making this university that we love so great. So wanted to shout him out. And so, you know, with that covers everything we needed to talk about Texas Tech related this week. Dustin, before we get out of here, what's your final shot for us this week?
Honestly, not a lot besides the Mavericks need to get it together in the NBA Finals. I mean, as of Tuesday night when we're talking, they're down 0-2 to the Celtics. Got blown out game one. I barely even watched the second half because it was pretty much over. Game two was better, but still could never close on them. And they just
game
looked,
two was the one they had to get.
They had to, because the Celtics shot like crap.
Tatum sucked.
And Tatum sucked, and you still couldn't do anything. So my expectations are a lot lower than they were about a week ago for this team. And the Celtics just look so much better.
Yeah, game one had me really nervous after the Celtics just came out when KP came out and had that, like,
sure,
amazing stretch. It's like, man, they didn't even really need him, but they're going to come out and he's going to give them 21 points in 20 minutes, look healthy, be a complete, you know, force on the defensive side of the ball. I was like, man, this might be a short series. I think the Celtics are really good at doing the things that defending the things that the Mavs are good at. You know, the Mavs are corner threes and lobs, the two of the things that they love. The Mavs have made two corner threes, I think, so far this series. And I haven't really seen many lobs. I think there's maybe been like one or two
game
lobs.
Game one, they had zero.
If there, I don't even remember one in game two. So there might not be like an official, like, I think there was one. And I think it was maybe on a fast break, but they've eliminated the things that the Mavs are good at, and they're giving Kyrie problems. You know, everybody was all so gung-ho about Kyrie, and Kyrie's been pretty terrible so far this series. And, you know, they're throwing Jaylen Brown, Tatum, Drew Holiday. They have so many.
Drew Holiday's guarding him really well.
Jaylen Brown the other day, there was like that crazy possession where Kyrie was like trying to get open, and Brown just was all over him. So that their guards, all the guards that they can throw at Kyrie are giving him problems. I don't feel confident the Mavs can make a comeback. We'll see if they can win game three. How do you think this series ends? What, five? Do you think the Mavs can push six?
I think they either win three or four, avoid the sweep, but then the Celtics close it out in five and end it quick.
I think right now, if I had to put my money on it, I think the Mavs win game three. I think Celtics win four, and then I think they close it out at home.
Close it. Yeah, I agree.
We'll see if the Mavs come out and do some things. If KP is hurt and can't play the rest of the series, that would help. Mavs have been winning the Al Horford minutes, I think. So if you can come out and kick ass in game three, that might change how I feel about the series just a little bit, because I was like, oh, maybe they figured out some things. But right now it just feels Celtics are good. They're a really good team. This is a team that's only lost.
Yeah, they're
20
loaded,
games.
Man.
Yeah, like, it's ridiculous. You'd draft Luka number one, but then like six of the next seven picks are all Celtics players that you would take before you.
And like five of them are all-star type guys.
Yeah. And right now, after two games, I think I might be taking Kyrie after all of those guys, the way he's played so far. So.
Oh, yeah. He's averaging like 14 points a game, and PJ Washington's averaging 15.
Yeah. So, and then all that, like, Drew Holiday's been the best player for Drew, and Jaylen Brown have been like the best players. You failed to capitalize on like the bad Jason Tatum games. And so you just kind of think one game he's going to get it going. And so, tough spot for the Mavs to be in, but, you know, ultimately making the finals, destroying the Timberwolves the way they did was impressive. They just might have run out of gas here.
Yeah, they had a rough West, and they ran into just a way better team. And you didn't really put this team together till halfway through the year either. So maybe you can build on that for next year.
Yeah. Plus the role guys, you know, nobody's been hitting threes. It was pretty much like Luka.
That was their biggest thing in the last series.
It's like they put in Dante Exum and he finally made an open three. I was like, holy shit. Yeah, he looks funky out there, but hey, at least he made his wide open three. While like PJ Washington can't make a three, Kyrie can't. Kleber looks like that dude looks so scared to shoot the basketball, and I know his shoulders.
Oh, but he's not
up.
Scared to go try to dunk on Porzingis.
Oh yeah,
he's stuffed, idiot.
He'll have like the ball for a wide open three, and you can tell you're like, oh man, this dude just like doesn't even think he has a chance of making the shot. So. Interesting NBA finals, the NHL, the Florida Panthers, the Ice Cats, two games away from winning their first Stanley Cup ever. So,
I quit watching when the Stars got eliminated.
Yeah, the only reason I pay attention is because that's the Levitard show is, you know, Florida-based, and they're all big Florida Panthers fans. So they've been fun to listen to talk about that series and how they've started the series. They're two games away from lifting the cup for the first time. So that's kind of fun to be able to hop in on a Levitard show after they've won and listen to that stuff. But all that screams is that it's almost time where those sports are over and it's just baseball. It's just baseball to carry.
Yeah, that's boring.
That's boring. There's no Lubbock Air Raiders TBT team this year.
Nope.
So we don't even have that to kind of carry us through July. So going to be rough out here, but we'll try to figure out ways to make content, get creative things to discuss here on Tailgate Talks, and to catch everything we're doing here through the rest of the summer into football season. Follow us on Apple, follow us on Spotify, give us those five stars for the tailgate, please. If you listen to us on Apple, you can always leave us a review there. Also, follow us on social media, follow us on Twitter at @tailgate_talks. It's where we do most of our posting, interacting. So if you want to catch anything, any of our thoughts when news breaks or stuff like that happens, follow us there. Any tech games, we're tweeting out our thoughts, so give us follow on that. But we do have Facebook, Instagram, and a YouTube channel. We want to thank you guys for hanging out with us today. We always have fun at these tailgates. Hopefully it won't be another 3-week stretch of not getting episodes out. And so till next time, we will catch y'all at the next tailgate. Peace.